This is Olympic champion Scott Hamilton. Yes, the real Scott Hamilton. And you're listening to the other Scott Hamilton show, where you should be entertained, informed, and maybe even amused. Just don't expect any backflips. I mean, have you seen him skate?
Welcome back. I almost forgot Maction is tonight.
Ooh, Tuesday Maction.
7 o'clock, Akron at Western Michigan, CBS Sports Network, Buffalo at Miami of Ohio, ESPNU, and then 8 o'clock, Ohio at Eastern Michigan. That's on ESPN2. Mac, looking at Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee State, but will only take both if one goes. They want Middle Tennessee State, but if they don't go, they don't want either of them.
Ooh, okay. Why is that?
It's a money thing. They want them in pairs to make more sensible travel partners.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
And Middle Tennessee State is vetting all of its options right now. Never stops, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
College football playoff rankings come out tonight. I'm wondering how different they're going to look from last week. So I'm thinking pretty different. We're going to have Georgia 1. And then after that, I don't know, other than I think Cincinnati might be out. Mm-hmm. I can see Ohio State and Oregon both being in.
Yes.
In Oklahoma. Those are my four. I'm going to see if our guest agrees. Joining us now in the Saitama Hotline, he covers college football for the Tampa Bay Times. Matt Baker, welcome to the Scott Hamilton Show.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Matt, who do you have tonight? Who's your top four?
Well, I'm an AP top 25 voter. Right now, I've got Georgia, Bama, Cincinnati, and Oregon. I don't feel good about it. I mean, Georgia's great. Like, they are an awesome team. They're probably going to win the national title unless they get stuck in some bad Georgia luck. And then, honestly, 2 through 8 or 9, I don't have super strong feelings. There's not a great team in there. Alabama's very good. Advanced Metrics like them, but, you know, they played with their food against a not great LSU team. Cincinnati keeps kind of screwing around against the middling AAC team. Oregon has a loss to Stanford. Ohio State hasn't always been dominant, and they certainly weren't against Nebraska. Oklahoma has not looked great at times, I thought, this year against, you know, Nebraska and Tulane, some of those. And on, there's one that's pretty clear, and then the rest, I could make cases for a handful of other teams.
You know, Matt, I was a top 25 voter, I think, for 7 years, and I caught myself in doing this way too often. I would penalize teams for winning, but not winning as I expected them to win. And I would always come away thinking, but they still got the win. They still did what they ultimately was supposed to do. And that brings me to this point. I feel like we're almost punishing Oklahoma. Oklahoma's beating the teams it's supposed to beat. We're just not happy with how they're doing it. How do you shy away from doing that, from penalizing a team for not winning with style?
Yeah, so the most important thing is that you win, but you also have to look at, you know, I have fans ask me all the time, what about this, what about that? I try and look at everything, right, as much as I can. I look at advanced metrics. I look at the strength of schedule. I look, obviously, at the wins and losses. How did you do in those wins and losses? And, look, right now we're through 10 weeks. So most teams have 9 data points, and that's it. So we have to get everything we can out of those 9 data points. And when you look at, like, Oklahoma specifically, their best win is Kansas State by 6 points, Texas on a last-second play. I mean, I guess, you know, they beat TCU by 31, but TCU fired the coach. Like, they don't have a super strong win that you can really point to. Then you have to dissect the rest, and you have to look at the fact that they looked awful against Kansas, and you have to look at that. You know, they didn't look impressive against West Virginia, and on, and that all kind of factors into it. Would I be surprised if at the end, or if tonight Oklahoma is fourth? No. Would I be surprised in December 31st, Oklahoma is playing in the Orange Bowl or the Cotton Bowl as one of the Final Four? No. But as we sit here right now, I don't know that they're one of the top. I don't think they're one of the top four teams in the country. We'll see if they can make that case later, but as I sit here now, I don't think they are.
I have a problem with Cincinnati. I don't know how to gauge Cincinnati. On one hand, nope. Well, I don't really have a problem. I like the city of Cincinnati, but I'm almost like, it's a career achievement award, first of all, for success they had coming into this season, which is not supposed to be part of the equation. But also, I think it's very desirous to have a Cinderella, to have the little engine that could, a Group of Five team that bursts through the ceiling and gets into the exclusive college football playoff. But at the same time, they are winning. They're doing what they have to do, but they literally have fewer good opportunities for a signature win. The one they had, they got. And I feel like they're being rewarded for mediocrity against a mediocre schedule. What's your take?
Yeah, I've had Cincinnati 2 the last couple weeks, and I dropped him to 3 just because, like, at some point, look, for a Group of Five to realistically have a shot at the playoff, there's a couple things that need to happen. One is they need to have a big non-conference win. That means something. And Notre Dame, that definitely qualifies. Notre Dame has played a lot better. You know, that win is going to hold up. That's a strong win. Kudos. But then when you're playing the rest of the schedule, the teams that are not impressive, I think you need to kick the crap out of them. And I was willing to give them a pass for Navy, a one-score win over Navy, because Navy's always really tricky. Their schedule, you know, their record is not great, but Navy is a tough, tricky team. I gave them a pass for that. They weren't dominant against Tulane. It ended up being a 19-point game, but it wasn't fantastic. Okay, I'll give them a pass on that. Tulsa's not good. And Cincinnati maybe should have lost that game. You know, Cincinnati has a great defense, number 3 scoring defense in the country. They've got an NFL quarterback in Desmond Ridder. Sauce Gardner is an All-American cornerback. They've got players, so they're one of the better Group of Five teams, maybe the best Group of Five team we've seen in this playoff era. But at some point, they need to play like it. And you know, I'm going to be all things go well. I'm going to be covering them Friday night against South Florida here, 20 minutes from my house. And I'm curious to see what they look like in person. I've covered playoff games. I know what playoff teams look like. I want to see what my eyes tell me and whether those guys belong.
You know, Matt, I was of the mind that a lot of this could have been just taken out of the conversation if Houston had taken care of business in 2016. They had the formula very similar to what you've laid out. I'm of the belief that you need 2 Power 5 wins, and they had that at Oklahoma to open the season. They had primetime game against Louisville. You needed a Heisman Trophy contender. They had Greg Ward Jr. at quarterback. You need a coach that people are buzzing about, the coach du jour. They had that with Tom Herman. Hasn't really panned out so well for him. But and you need a good Group of Five conference, which they had with the American yet again. I think if Houston had pulled that off, had not stubbed its toe in 2016, we would have had at least – they would have gotten in probably UCF, and then Cincinnati wouldn't even be that much of a point of contention now.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And plus, you know, I think a Group of Five team also needs to kind of be established to get over the hump a little bit. And that Houston team beat Florida State in the Peach Bowl the year before, if I'm not mistaken. So they had that too. So as I look at that Houston team, I was in Grapevine, Texas, where the playoff committee does their stuff. I did a mock selection thing. Tampa was hosting the national championship in 16. So I was there doing that, and I remember talking to people. And the consensus was that, Houston had a chance. If they would have won out, that Houston team had a chance. And they didn't. I think Navy got them, if I'm not mistaken, and that's that. But that's the tightrope that a Group of Five team walks right now, and it's unfortunate. I thought it was dumb that, like, Western Michigan, when they went undefeated, didn't have a chance. I thought it was dumb that go back to Boise and whoever else. I think the system's dumb and it needs change, but this is the system we have right now. And if you're going to play a schedule that's 7 or 8 of the Tulsas and Tulanes, you need to kick the crap out of them. And Cincinnati hasn't been doing that yet. But we'll see what they do against a not good USF team on Friday. SMU is a good team later in the month, and East Carolina is not good, and then, you know, potentially playing a top 25 Houston team in the AAC title game. So they got chances here. Let's see if they can actually convert and capitalize.
Joined by Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times. You can follow him on Twitter at MBakerTBTimes. And Matt, let me take you back to the morning of October 2nd. On October 2nd, Florida was 3-1, Miami was 2-3, and Florida State was 0-4. That has all been flipped on its head over the past 5-6 weeks. What in the world has happened to restructure the hierarchy of football in the Sunshine State?
This is going to end up being one of the worst years since Florida became a power as a state, I'm talking, you know, since Schnellenberger made Miami into Miami, this is going to be one of the worst years the state has ever had. So what happened? Florida State became competent. They weren't as bad as they looked early on. You know, you look, they took Notre Dame to overtime and missed a field goal. And so they weren't as bad as it seemed early on. And they found an offense. They found an identity with Jordan Travis. Mike Norvell did what I think he's going to be able to do, which is use some playmakers and X and O them and put them in the right place. They're still not a great team, but they are now competent. And that they are better now than they were at the start of the year. Miami, look, they had a couple really rough losses, you know, to Virginia and North Carolina, just fluky stuff, where one time they play to kick the field goal to win it and they miss it. Another time they go for a touchdown late to try it and they throw a interception that gets bounced around. So they were very unlucky. And now that luck has turned to the other side, where they've won a couple close games here, and suddenly, you know, it looks like Manny's going to get another year to kind of prove that he can do it in South Florida. And the Gators are just a disaster. They're just a disaster. Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. They've gone from, you know, and the South Carolina game was the absolute turning point. And it's fair to wonder whether that's the point of no return for Dan Mullen.
Well, that would be my final question for you, Matt. Dan was asked the question yesterday if he's the problem. Is he the problem?
Mm-hmm. I think Florida has a lot of problems. You look at the history of that program, there's two coaches that have done a really good job there, and not a lot of else. Not a lot of the other ones have. And so you have to look at Florida as a whole. You look at the facilities, and they are behind. They're catching up. They're going to open a new complex here. I think it's in the summer, and that's going to help a lot. I wonder if the expectations are too high. I wonder if they're committed to doing what it takes to be a football power the way Alabama is and Georgia is and Clemson is. But I think it's hard to look at where they are right now and not say one of the problems is what Dan Mullen has done. He hasn't recruited at a high enough level. I mean, just one quick example. You look at, you know, Florida should always have good receivers. You can throw a rock and hit a four-star receiver in the state. They should always have good athletes like that. They don't this year. They went from having, you know, four guys get to the NFL after the 2019 team. Then they replaced them with Kadarius Toney and Kyle Pitts and Trayvon Grimes. But the problem is that Mullen didn't bring most of those guys in. Those are guys that he inherited. And now that all the guys that Jim McElwain brought in are gone, the receivers, there's not a dude there that you can point to and be like, yeah, that looks like a Florida receiver. They don't have that. That's because they haven't recruited at a high enough level. And you look at where the class is right now in the 20s, I don't know that it's going to get better. And Mullen is a great X's and O's coach. He's a great tactician. But the fact of the matter is that the Georgias and Alabamas have more dudes. And you win games at a high level in college football with dudes. And I don't know that Mullen's going to be able to change to get more of the dudes that he needs to beat A&M and to beat Alabama and to beat Georgia and to beat LSU.
Excellent stuff from Matt Baker of the Tampa Bay Times. You can follow him on Twitter at MBakerTBTimes. Matt, again, very insightful, buddy. Appreciate your time this morning.
Sure. Thank you.
It's Matt Baker of the Tampa Bay Times joining us on the Saitama Hotline.